Before the cacophony pulls you back in a sonic storm built to grab your listeners' pulse and pull them in.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Better Business Podcast, where we get business owners where they are and we bring them to where they want to be. If you are looking to stay the same, you better shut this podcast off because we are trying to change. We're trying to grow and we are trying to be better so that we can do better. I'm Lauren Howard.
And I'm Coach Dan Callahan. Buckle up, everybody. Get ready for some incredible insights, some motivation, some ideas to help you grow your business. Welcome. This is the Better Business Podcast.
All right, everybody. This is going to be a good one. Our guest today is from Farmington, Connecticut. He is a family man. He has three kids, 14, 13, and 10. He has a big background in direct sales and business ownership of 15 years. He did territory sales management, enterprise software, and service sales. And basically, we're going to try to get some insight into his business today and what he knows best and what we're going to do to get his goals where he wants them to be. So welcome, everybody, the owner and founder of Soul Choice Solar, Jeff Amana. Welcome, buddy. What's going on?
Just excited to be here. Thankful nice. For the invite and looking forward to diving into some good conversations here.
Yeah. Great to have you on, man.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time, man. We're always jacked up to have more people come in. And I think, you know, we haven't really had anybody who... who's coming from solar or anything like that yet. Yeah. So
cool.
This is gonna be big. I feel like a lot of people automatically are like salesperson when you say solar. So, you know, I'm interested to see like what the story is and what's going on with that. But, just first let's hear about you, man. Just tell us a little bit about you, your personal story, like, where you come from, how you got here, and then what made you, start your own business.
Yeah. So I grew up in Long Island, New York, and, ended up somehow making my way to Connecticut for college. Mm. Didn't really know what I wanted to do in life. Just wanted to be rich, really. Nice. My goal was to make a lot of money and then not have a job. So
yeah, love that.
I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I think probably the college path was not the best route for me, but that was what I was told my whole life growing up.
Yep.
You know, that was the expectation.
Right.
So I went to college and, while I was in college, a friend of mine had gotten into some business opportunity, you know, like one of the pyramid things. Mm-hmm. And I agreed to go to a meeting with him. And I heard a very dynamic speaker, got me fired up and motivated. So I said, screw it, let's give it a shot. And I got into a direct sales network marketing business at 20. It was a blessing in that I was able to get around very influential, wealthy people. I've been to, I don't even know how many conferences and listened to God knows how many books and audios and read how many, God knows how many books.
Yep.
And that really shaped me a lot in my desire to be an entrepreneur and grow a business. So from that point, there's been really no looking back. I probably stayed in that world a little too long.
Yeah.
But I don't
drank a little too much of the Kool-Aid.
A little too much of the Kool-Aid, maybe. But you know, we had a lot of success in that industry, and I could say arguably it's one of the most difficult businesses you could possibly build.
Yeah.
And you know, we scaled it up to $1 million in revenue from zero in recurring revenue.
Yeah.
But we just never could get it profitable enough to quit my job. So for many, many years, I was working 40 hours a week. Plus, and building $1 million business on the side of that while having raising kids and being married and all that fun stuff. So,
yeah,
that's a lot.
Yeah, that's interesting
for sure.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, say what you will, you know, there's a lot of different types of multi-level marketing companies out there, right. But the training that you get is
second to none.
Yeah, it's transferable in so many different ways as an entrepreneur. So, it really, there's a lot of, you know, MLM gets a bad rap and justifiably sometimes, but not all the time. And also like you said, the speakers, the training, like all that is super, super important.
No question about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I mean, as much as everybody likes to pretend like they're not salesmen in their business, you know, they are, no matter what they do, you have a business, you're a salesman. If you're an entrepreneur, you're a salesman. If you provide a service, you're a salesman. So
I have that conversation like once a week with a business owner. They're like, oh yeah, I don't do sales. I just talk to people and some of them buy from me. I'm like, well, that sounds a lot like sales to me.
Yeah, it sounds like sales. And so I mean, that's awesome, man. So like, what got you like in the transition? Like, where did you end up? Like, all right, I'm going to start Soul Choice. Like, how did that come up?
Yeah, so I mean, the biggest thing is I'm not a quitter, right? So I almost have to be pushed out of things to my own detriment sometimes. I gave that business everything I had. I had many people following me. We probably recruited over 1,000 people, directly and indirectly throughout the time in that business. I mean, obviously, as you probably would guess, there's a very high turnover rate.
Yeah.
We learned the metrics of the business and how to really continuously maintain it and scale it. But just got to a point where, we got 3 kids. I didn't choose the most lucrative careers because I was focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
Just needed to pay the bills. But there came a point where I realized I needed to start to, like, the money issue was important at that point, right, with kids and everything like that.
Yeah.
So I started to focus on growing my career, if you will, against all of my desires and wishes, just kind of out of a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to, and that was actually very difficult because I was kind of pigeonholed at that point. 10 years ago, it was the way that recruiters operated, the way that hiring managers operated. It was always from the conversation of what's your current salary, right?
Yeah.
And I had, killed myself in that arena because I stayed in a job that I was very underemployed at for a long time. And then you can't really, I think the biggest thing I had to learn was how do I convey what I accomplished out there, which was not really something that is that transferable in most people's minds. And that's the message I learned how to convey. And I ended up doubling my salary and taking a role as a territory manager covering the Southeast United States for a industrial hardware manufacturer. So I was always traveling all over, covered from Texas to Florida. And then they wanted me to cover California as well. And at that point I was like, I can't do this. So
while living up here, you were covering the
while
Southeast.
Living here. So any business development that I had to do had to be face to face because I'm walking around manufacturing facilities and finding things that we could sell them at a better price in high volume.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to be in front of the customer. So I was prospecting from Connecticut over the phone. And then I would set up my week with appointments.
Yeah.
With, target accounts, cold call, get into the accounts, and then schedule my hotels and dip various flights for that week where I was going to go and just hope for the best.
Wow.
And, I started to have success there and then it just got too crazy on the family. So I ended up getting offered a role as head of business development after that for electric motor drives and controls company focusing on like the K-12 market, hospitals, manufacturing facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And that was right before COVID. So I was there for, maybe about a year or so. And then COVID hit. And then I was told, I can't really pay you.
God.
after COVID, I ended up taking a role with AAA for a little while as a territory manager there, managing roadside assistance contractors and then the approved auto repair group. But I knew that wasn't where I needed to be because there's really no scalability there in terms of upside.
Mm-hmm.
So, a friend of mine had reached out to me. There was an enterprise software as a service sales position at his company. So I went to that. And while I was working there, we had bought a house that our electric bill was like $1,500 the second month that we moved in because it was all electric heat.
Yeah.
And a pretty large house. So we looked into solar. And me, with my background as an entrepreneur, always looking at business opportunities, always seeing things from a value proposition standpoint. Anytime I sit with a salesperson, I'm looking for what the value proposition is, thinking like, I wonder if I could sell that product. Is there money to be made in this? And for me, solar was an absolute no-brainer. you know, it's got almost an inarguable value proposition.
Yeah.
Especially in this market where the utility rates are so high.
Yeah.
Solar was good for me. So I believed it would be good for other people.
Yeah.
And the market is diverse, right? It's for people on the lower income spectrum, all the way up to people who are high income people because of the tax credits and things that are involved. It's just a financial product that makes sense. The challenge that we see in the solar industry is that there's sometimes a lack of integrity.
Yes.
And or knowledge, even on the sales side. Because there's products that are very easy to sell, oftentimes those products are the products that are pushed in the marketplace by the larger corporations because the salespeople don't really have to know that much. It's like, we're going to save you a couple dollars on your electric bill and, you know, just do it because it doesn't cost you any money.
Right. Yeah, right.
Right. So I guess there's a couple things. One, I realized it was a very easy value proposition.
Yeah.
The second thing that I was unsure of was, you know, whether it would make sense from a business standpoint to dive into that. So by luck, in that process of getting solar, I was able to connect to a major solar broker nationally out of Utah. I ended up doing my project through him. And I said, hey, man, you know, what would it take for me to be able to, you know, partner up with you and, you know, give this a shot? So while I had my job in enterprise sales, I got set up in business. I started an LLC. He was nice enough to connect me with a few key partners on the financing side and the install side. And I just started to work with people and help them navigate the process, you know, started closing some deals and realized I could do it. And then from there, it just kind of scaled.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, remind me when did you go kind of all in and quit your job?
Yeah. So my first year, I think my first year, I kept my job and I think I made my base salary in solar working part-time on the side. So, I had some pipeline that was developing and then, my good friend who I was working with in the company was like, I'm going to leave this company. So I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm leaving too.
Nice.
And, you know, my second full year, I think I quadrupled my base salary.
Nice. So yeah.
My previous base salary at my job. So, and it wasn't a low base salary. It was actually pretty high base salary. So, mm-hmm.
So no brainer.
No brainer.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's awesome.
Like, all right, this was the right move. Nice.
And I could say one thing. I never once did a deal with a customer that I wouldn't have taken myself.
Right. Right.
And that's always how I look at every interaction that I have with a customer is, you know, is there a strong business case for this? Would I do this if I was that person? As long as I can articulate that case in a way that I believe it makes sense, then, you know, that's always been my lens of looking at, you know, qualifying opportunities with people.
Yeah. I think those two very important points. Like one is just your deep belief in what you're doing. Right.
Right.
And two, high integrity, right?
Right.
And that's what makes a great salesperson is passion and integrity, right?
And that's, you know, one of the things I've realized is, you know, people love to buy, but they don't like to be sold, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a cliche for it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when you take the approach of consulting with someone and building a business case, you really don't have to sell anything. You just present the facts.
Right.
And then it's more just leading them to making the right decision.
Right. Does my solution fix your problem?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Makes sense.
Absolutely.
So now that you're in business, right, what's your vision? Like, what do you see this thing becoming, whether it's revenue goals, team goals, locations, impact?
And that's an interesting thing, right? Because I always had such a huge vision my entire adult life, like my early adult life, really from, you know, 20 to 30, I had these like clearly articulated goals that I would talk about and speak about and profess all the time. Right. Cause that's what the books told me to do. and you know, there's something to be said for that. Right. You know, speak what you want as if it were,
yes.
You know, speak things into existence. And I did those things every day, all the time, right? I was probably on an average of 4 or 5 books a month that I read, and listening to audios every single day, going to conferences every quarter, you know, weekly meetings that I was running, like nonstop.
Yep.
And what's funny is my goals didn't really manifest through that vehicle that I was completely sold out and dedicated to. And when this showed up, I didn't really have a plan. I just put one foot in front of the other and just went. And everything that I wanted, you know, was accomplished in a very short period of time. So it's really that work that I put forth, I believe, for many, many years, beating my head up against the wall. You know, they say success is when preparation and opportunity meet. You know, I think this was a situation where I was prepared for the right opportunity that was lucrative and profitable to fall in my lap. And I had a lot of success early on without a whole lot of planning and vision and goals. what I can say is who I am is I'm a person who loves to partner with other people. I love providing opportunities to people. I love entrepreneurship. I hate management. I hate managing people. I don't want to manage anyone, right? I want to manage myself, my actions, my attitude, and I want to partner with people that have similar values and value entrepreneurship. And that's really how I've modeled my business out. And there's not many people around locally in this market that are in solar that do it the way that I do it. But, you know, the first thing I started to do was through my skills that I developed in the direct sales industry and network marketing was just network. And a lot of my business comes from networking. In a little shortly after that, I started to evaluate different marketing companies and lead sources, many of which were a waste of money. You know, I spent tens and tens of thousands of dollars on lead generation that just was ineffective. And I did find one or two that I've got a strong ROI from. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I've just navigated organically through the process, taking the skills and the beliefs that I developed from years and years and years in the direct sales industry, corporate sales, all that stuff. Also recruiting, right? I recruited, you know, a handful, I'd say many solar partners that many of them didn't do anything. And there's a few that do, but that's by choice because I found that my return on my investment of time in just hustling myself, going out, servicing people, and then depending on myself for the vast majority of the success that I have in business. And then if I find someone that I can partner with that has similar values, I'm there to help them. I got their back, you know, but I'm not going to call them and ask them, what are you doing today? What's your goal? I'm not going to try to motivate them. I'm looking for people that are already motivated. Right? That's just by choice.
The sole choice.
The sole choice. The only one.
So then are you trying to get to a certain size with your team or do you just, it doesn't matter?
I'm winging it, bro. No, I'm not really winging it. My goal is to provide a good service. So a lot of my time is spent on making sure, number one, that the operations of my business are strong because that's everything.
Yep.
You know, one of the nightmares in solar for people that are in solar independently is dealing with the different contractors that they work with. And if they're not stable, you know, the contractors, the financers, you know, you could be doing a lot of work and not getting paid.
Right. Because you don't get paid until it actually gets on the roof.
So that's one point, right? And knock on wood, like I've never been stiffed by anybody in business because I've done a good job on the front end vetting my partnerships. The second point of what I've focused on is making sure that I have a robust offering to be a strong competitor in the marketplace. So we can oftentimes win deals against some of the most recognized names because we've got way more options than a typical. I mean, who as a business owner, I'm competing against W-2 or 1099 sales reps that are being told what to do every day.
Right.
You know, that in and of itself is, you know, a very strong position. The second thing is that I've got way more options that they do because from the larger organizations, they're focused on drilling down to maybe the simplest product or the easiest turnaround for their objectives in their business.
Right. So let me ask you this, Jeff. Is your goal still to make enough money to not have to work?
Well, I don't work because I don't have a job anymore. That was my first goal, right? I don't want to work for anybody.
Okay, so it was to not work for anybody or to not have to work?
No, I do still have that goal, for okay. sure, All for right. sure, right? But my biggest thing that I realized is if I could have figured out a way, I should have figured out a way sooner to not be an employee.
Mm.
Because every single day that I sat in an office working for someone else, my soul was slowly dying.
Mm.
Right? So
I know exactly how
I feel great right now.
Yeah.
Because like I have no problem working. I actually enjoy the work that I'm doing. I think when you ask me if my goal is still not to work, the answer to that question is no, because I enjoy work. My goal is not to have to for somebody.
Mm.
I don't know if you phrase it that way. You might have, but yeah, to be completely financially independent, absolutely.
Yeah.
And other than this vehicle, I've not seen anything close to it for me personally.
Yeah.
But the challenge becomes figuring out scalability versus profitability, which I know you do a great job of teaching people how yeah. how to navigate that that pathway.
Yeah. Okay. So as far as kind of, I think you kind of covered what makes you unique, right? It's the fact that you've got multiple options. You're really coming in as it's a consultative approach.
Correct.
So talk about your target market. Like who's an ideal customer for you?
An ideal customer for me is anyone who owns a home that gets good sun on their house, right? And has the roof space to accommodate panels or the ground space to accommodate a ground array.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There are products and offerings that cater to pretty much every income level as long as somebody owns a house.
So how do you pre-qualify somebody? Because I would imagine that's a big risk for you in your industry is, oh yeah, well, we'll come out and do a free consultation and you're driving 45 minutes an hour and the person's a tire kicker or, you know, they don't.
And that happens a lot in the door-to-door model with the setters and closers, right? Because the setters are just out there trying to hit numbers and they're sending closers out on appointments that just really shouldn't be set in the first place.
Yeah.
A lot of that process for me is over the phone. You know, have an initial conversation with someone, build rapport, trust, ask the key questions that I need to ask, make them feel comfortable with me and give them like a high level understanding of solar in general and what we'll be talking about. But ultimately the qualification process is on the front end, evaluating their house. You know, oftentimes before I even make a phone call, if I have a lead, I'll pull their house up and I'll look at it and I can tell if it's going to make sense or not.
Okay.
And then what we'll do is we'll see their utility bill, their usage. There's a 12-month usage table on every utility bill. And the goal will be to size the system to cover 100% of their bill and get them energy independent if we can.
So you get all that information before you even show up. So
I try to, But if I don't have that bill or that usage, it really doesn't matter because I can get it when I'm with them. The biggest thing is I'm going to look at their house and I'm going to know. I could even plug into my software and see, you know, the exact sun hours that the house gets. So I don't have to waste my time driving hours for no reason.
All right. Yeah. That's huge. And that's for me, like I see a lot of people that do free consultations and the amount of time wasted is just, it's crazy. Insane. Yeah.
And that's part of kind of what drives me is the time thing, because when I talked earlier about scaling through other reps, I don't want to teach people how to think, right? I want people who have critical thinking skills that are hungry,
right?
You know, because there's enough on the table that in and of itself should motivate somebody. There's a strong enough value proposition, a strong enough offering, and enough on the table that someone who has critical thinking skills should be able to figure this out and execute.
Yeah,
right.
I'm curious what of kind of, if you kind of looked at your week or your month and all the things that you're doing, how much of that requires, like what percentage requires critical thinking or requires your level of knowledge and skills?
what percentage requires critical thinking or my level of knowledge and skills.
Right. The sales process.
Yeah. So the sales process, the way that I've tried so far, I've tried executing the process all on my own, from initial lead generation to qualification and appointment setting. And then I've had people that I've had set appointments for me as well. Sometimes they've been effective, sometimes they've not been effective. I do like the fact that if I'm starting at the beginning, I can control where my time is allocated. So I haven't experienced yet somebody that is that I've worked with that's good enough at that process to not waste my time.
Okay.
So a portion of that I do delegate. I have, you know, a few reps that if I'm too busy to call leads, I will give them the leads.
Yep.
I'm not super impressed with the results of that so far, but it's better than just letting them sit there.
Right, letting them get cold.
My current process is, you know, as long as my bandwidth is good, and solar's kind of, you know, it's a little bit of a roller coaster, right? In the industry, they call it the solar coaster for various reasons. My reasoning is it'll kind of ebb and flow. I'll get very, very busy, and then some of my attention will focus on making sure the operations side is strong, even though that's not really my responsibility in the field. I do, from a customer service standpoint, want to make sure that everything goes smooth. That's when everybody gets paid, right? When the installs happen. So
yeah.
I do notice that sometimes my business development activity slows down a little bit in those cycles.
When you get busy.
When I get busy. And that's right. When I kind of offload some lead gen stuff that I just don't have the time to follow up on. So I've got people kind of there that I can dish stuff to, but I don't have someone that's been trained up that's their role on a consistent basis, which probably would be a good idea.
Yeah, is there a way to record yourself through the whole entire thing and then just send it to him and say, this is how it works? And then you don't have to.
Yeah.
You know?
Makes sense.
Right.
Do something without writing it down or recording it, and you're destined to repeat it.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, and the reason I was asking is just because, you know, there's an 80-20 rule in everything, right? So if there's something that takes you 4 hours, probably three of those hours is repetitive tasks that can be systematized. Right. And I know you don't want to build a big team, but also, like, if you're going to scale at all,
So
your capacity is going to minimize that scalability.
I do want to build a big team. I don't want to manage people.
Right.
So there's a difference, in my opinion, from building a team and building people that you have to manage. Right. I think a leader inspires by what they can accomplish, by what they do, by blazing the trail. True leadership is that, right? And then there's the more of like the corporate type of leadership where you've got VP of sales type people that are bullshitting the board of directors and the CEO, and then bullshitting the salespeople and actually do absolutely nothing.
Right.
Right.
Coming up with excuses why they didn't hit their number. They're brainstorming.
What's your pipeline look like?
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I see it all the time. Sales managers, even in solar, and they're sending group messages out like, hey, what's everybody's plan today? Dude, you're just wasting my time that I have to respond to that question. Right. So.
Yeah, but they have to represent what hopefully you should be, even though it seems like they're doing nothing.
Right. Yeah, it's just, I'm so against, like, I get the ick when I even just think of that type of environment or culture. So at the end of the day, I'm happy to have as big of a team as possible, but it's with the right people. And it's an interesting thing. Like, it really is this opportunity. I don't really know what the changes are going to be after this year.
Yeah.
And how things might shift. But I'd have to say where I'm at right now is very niche. So does it make sense to seize the opportunity now, make as much money as possible, help as many people as possible, see what happens, or allocate a lot of time and resources towards recruiting and training and missing the window of time where it's most lucrative and effective for everyone. So that's kind of where I've been, but yeah.
I would say it probably depends on how hard you're going to have to struggle when that lucrativeness goes away with the person who's going to have to do whatever work that you're not going to want to do since the money kind of goes away. How hard is it going to be to convince people to join the team then? And what's it going to look like for them to jump on? And right. how much are you going to have to manage then rather than, I don't know, finding the guys now who may make more money?
Absolutely.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense. And I'm always open to ideas to, you know, do a better job with finding the right people. But it's interesting in that, you know, I've not tried to recruit many people, and it's just kind of happened organically through networking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm very anti-structure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We've gathered that from this conversation.
Yeah. I don't like structure.
Yeah.
That's okay, dude.
Yeah.
There's decentralization.
Yep.
That's what most people want to do. There's a book. Damn it. I can't remember the name of it. But it's something based on innovation and decentralization, and it talks about like the Apache and all the other organizations in the world that were all had no leaders, and basically they became like these massive strongholds on the societies around them because of the fact that they were decentralized. But their chaos had organization to a certain extent to where. Yeah. They all believed in it so strongly that if it acted any other way, it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't work. It would fall apart. So like Wikipedia, for instance, you know, that no one owns it or no one runs it, but right. everyone runs it mm-hmm. at the same time. So like if someone wanted to go in and, you know, bash somebody in their own thing, they could, but because the structure around it in the world is just not going to allow the facts to fall out, they all come in and they solve it anyways. So the second you put in something that's false, you know, the world comes in and fills in. So, I mean, there is a way for it to happen. I mean, I think it's just a matter of how someone's going to get behind it and making them believe in that.
Right.
Right. So maybe it's not even the fact that, sure, the work is great to get the customer to like buy through you and have the amount of lucrative money there is there. It's just selling to the people who might want to work for you. And then you don't even have to manage them. You just have to sell them on the belief that they don't have to be managed. They just need to work. And then you're like building out. So is it more lucrative to have 30 guys in the lucrative time making money and then having a percentage of that, or just you making the full amount throughout that time? And then trying to take off of the top of somebody when the price is.
Yeah. So I think there's talking about that from a vision standpoint. And then there's the actual realistic execution of that, which are very different things. So to answer your question, yes, it would be more lucrative to have 30 killers out there.
Right.
Independently mm-hmm. driven, but those guys also know the business and know other places they could go to replicate what I'm doing. So it's a tough thing, you know, and I've thought through that. Should I allocate time towards focusing on recruiting? But there's a lot of back end things that come into play with that as well. So those are all things that have to kind of be, you know, penciled out and figured.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah,
dude, right? That's the sale. In plumbing, there's only 630 plumbers near my shop within 20 miles. There's like 52 shops, and some of those companies have like 200 employees.
Yeah.
And then it's like, so how many are left? Friggin' none. Mm-hmm. So what do these guys do? They start businesses.
Yep.
And then I could tell them how awesome our business is and what we do and how we make it happen. And they could decide, well, I'll just do that.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, sure, you could. Or
Right.
You don't have to think about this part, and the fact that I'm literally like using toilet paper from the dollar store because last week was a little tough. You could just come here and work and make a bunch of money. How's that sound? Oh yeah, it sounds good. So I do that in my sales process, bringing on plumbers. Yeah. So I mean, yeah, that's.
And it's always the challenge of, oh, like if I train them up, then they might leave. If you don't train them, they might stay. Right.
Yeah.
And then they're not growing and they're not getting better. So it's always that kind of that push and pull where it's like, all right, if you don't train them, then they'll be super mediocre and they'll stay with you forever. Is that better?
No, because in the end, someone's going to find them and be like, dude, you don't do training. You're not getting any smarter, any better. You're not making more money. They're like, oh yeah. Then they leave for the guy who fucking trains them. Yeah. You're like, damn it.
And they don't make money over there either.
And then they don't make money there either. They just, It's
sounds like you saved some time.
Right? It's crazy.
So, but, you know, there's no shortage of training on my end for people that pursue training. Mm. You know, it's just, in my opinion, in any type of direct sales opportunity where your income is dependent on your action, you're not getting fed your own leads. You're not, you know, the main ingredient is you got to be freaking motivated, right?
Yeah.
Like,
that's it.
You gotta be hungry.
If I show someone the opportunity and I say, look, this is our value proposition. This is how we fare in terms of our competition. Obviously we're the clear choice.
the sole choice,
the only choice.
And this is what your income will be because we are cutting out layers of people that are
corporate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're more competitive price wise and savings wise. And that's why you make three times more than what someone working for another company would make. What do you not have?
Mm.
BS meetings every week where we sit around and talk in circles.
Right.
You don't have, people asking you what you're doing. You have somebody that will jump in the trenches with you and fight and win deals.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to tell you what to do. If you're hungry, call. That's what I did when I started, right? I got started up. I needed help. I called.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody called me and said, hey, what did you do today?
Mm-hmm.
Show me your pipeline.
Right.
Were you in Salesforce today?
Yeah.
So what about like, have you had any success recruiting people that are already working for some of the other guys?
Yeah. So I have, you know, there's a shelf life, right? And I continue to do that. Right. So don't get me wrong. Like, I know that sometimes I could be passionate about my beliefs and what I don't like and do like, but, my radar is always up. My door is always open. You know, I recruit people consistently.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just weeding through the people that don't want to work.
Yep.
The people that maybe are super sharp and savvy that someone, you know, they get a better deal somewhere else or, so yeah, I've had success recruiting people from other organizations and, you know, I've paid them six figures.
Yeah.
In a single year. But it's just person specific, right?
Do they cost money if they don't make money?
Nope.
Hmm.
Just my time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had one guy that I recruited in New York who wanted to sell in Connecticut because he was on the border of New York. And at that time we weren't doing anything in New York. And this dude took like hours every day of my time. And, then he just went and found someone else in New York to work with. And I literally like trained this dude up, you know, gave him everything, all of my resources, the materials that I had to, you know, figure out in 2 or 3 years worth of doing this. And then, you know, one day he just was like, didn't close a single deal.
Ouch.
That's how we learn, right?
It's going to happen, dude. Yeah. I mean, it's going to happen.
Yeah, of course.
That's, dude, that's recruiting. That's hiring.
Time management, right?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Dan would have told me, stop wasting your, how many deals has this dude closed? None. Stop wasting your time with them.
Yep. Sure would have. Yeah, right. Time vampires are everywhere. All right. You gotta put the boundaries up quick.
Yeah, the boundaries, dude. That's the part. Yeah. Where it's like just stop answering.
Yeah.
At certain times, no matter what. So then he'll like just start building this thing on his own. Like, oh, if it's after 12, there's no way he's gonna freaking answer the phone. Like, no, he's not. My voicemail says, I'm not gonna call you back. So you should call my office. Because otherwise, you will not be served.
Yeah.
Love you. Awesome. So then, with all this being said, you know, what is your next big move? Like, what is the next thing that you want to do? Or do you want to just stay right here? Do you want to just, or is there something specific in your head you're like, so this is where I'm headed?
What's been in my head from the beginning, what's still in my head now is it's lead generation, right? None of the other things really matter that much. There's no shortage of sales reps to recruit. What does every solar person that is a closer want?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Leads.
Yep.
So the reason they go to larger organizations is because they're promised leads. Do they actually get them? Most cases they don't.
Right.
Okay. So,
or if they do, they don't know how to work them.
Yeah. And, but the real thing is they don't.
Or they get really grabby ones.
Yeah. So I've had many people that had very lucrative opportunities here that made lots of money, but got tired of just generating leads. So someone comes along and says, well, we'll give you this, but we'll also give you free leads every week.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're lazy and they don't want to self-gen, then they go there and only to find out that they're not really getting many leads.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So the answer to that question is really the only thing that matters. The thing that drives everything else, in my opinion, is just ample lead generation. And that's the problem that I've been trying to solve for quite some time. I've worked on call centers. I've worked on SMS. I've worked on door-to-door. So that's really it. I mean, the operations side is easy. The sales operations side is easy. It's really just figuring out lead gen and return on investment for lead gen.
Yeah. What's been the most successful for you?
I don't know if I can say this on this podcast. SMS has been the most successful, but there's different laws, regulating that market. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, it's getting even harder.
Yeah.
As long as we are compliant and
yeah,
I guess we're okay. But yeah, that's been the most effective for me.
So tough to scale that though, because you gotta be careful.
You have to ask if it's okay.
And
then they're like, no. And you're like, damn it.
It's been the most effective because people like to text.
Right.
And no one picks up their phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also very cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the return on that has been amazing.
Yeah, it's less threatening to like read a text and then think about it than to answer a phone and have to make a decision.
Yeah. So usually the text leads to a phone call at some point. And I think from a time standpoint, it's the most effective.
Mm-hmm.
The dollars out are not that high with the resources that I found. So
what else? Where else are you getting leads from?
I ran a few call centers. Lost, I think, $15,000 or $20,000 on that last year. Didn't close a single deal.
No. Oh, wow. My God.
I allocated probably $15,000 or $20,000 to it. I probably lost six figures in wasted time mm-hmm. and stress and distraction.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
We'll pour one out for that marketing strategy.
Yeah.
Right. Because that one is in the grave.
And was this just like a random, like they had marketed to you or found them through a source or?
I have people calling me all the time and, you know, I usually hear people out just to see.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned a lot of what's out there just from taking calls, answering Instagram ads, you know. Mm-hmm. So there, I had three or four different overseas guys calling me and
mm-hmm.
promising me the world. And, you know, the the value proposition that they presented to me made sense. So, you know, the cost model seemed fair, but I didn't realize that I was going to be getting a bunch of BS leads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that sucked. Do you do any mailers or anything?
We did try one mailer campaign. I think we might have sent out 5,000 mailers to a specific target market, but we haven't gone any further than that.
So 5,000 mailers one time to 5,000 people?
Or? Yeah, nothing came from that. So we haven't really tried that at scale.
Mm-hmm.
Solar is kind of an interesting industry in that it seems like a lot of people don't reach out to call.
Yeah.
You know, unless you've really scaled up, like, to the point of, you know, there's a few players in the industry that have been there for, you know, 20 some odd years and have done a good job at their branding and have a, you know, a huge presence by volume.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably people call into them, but aside from that, it's kind of hard to make a splash from a branding perspective, at least, you know. And what's interesting is none of them have any different products or offerings that make them good. Like, their installations aren't any better.
Yeah.
They've it's just
the luck of the draw.
They've been around for a long time. So there's some recognition. So when people say, oh, you know what, I want solar, they'll look and they'll, you know, the Google.
Yep. The stuff. Google list.
Yep.
Yep. Are you on Google?
I am on Google. Yes.
Nice.
Yes, I am.
How many reviews do you have?
Not very many. I have like maybe 15 or something like that at this point.
That's a lead gen. Big time.
That's a
free one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be working
on
that. So
I did set up for the Google guarantee thing, mm-hmm. yep. personally.
That's a big one. We get a ton of calls from that.
You know, our tree guy was saying that too.
Adam?
Adam, yes. Yeah.
Google guarantee.
Yeah. And I'm just not sure how to make it work.
Yeah.
Very easy. Fill in the blanks. Put a budget on. It's done.
I did.
How much did you put in?
I don't know. I don't remember. But I called them a week or two ago and asked them, like, hey, is everything set up right with my page? Like, I haven't received any calls or anything. So
yeah.
Turn it off.
Turn the page off?
And then turn it back on.
Really?
Mm-hmm. 100%. I had somebody tell me the same exact thing, marketing guy. He asked me how it was going. I was like, oh, it's going great. Calls are coming in. He goes, when they stop coming, he goes, change your budget. Doesn't work, shut it off. Start it over. Turn it back on.
Okay, I'll do that.
Simple, stupid, so
what's a good budget to be at? Like, what is?
I mean, we're only doing like 2,000 a week. So it's not like... we're not like the freaking, but we're getting, I don't know, maybe 20 calls a week.
So you're doing $2,000 a week?
Yeah.
Okay. And you're getting 20 calls
a week.
So that's a ratio. And
it's really,
see, good. I had no idea what the budget ratio was or what the expectation is, but that's.
Yeah. Whatever they suggest, don't do it.
Okay.
I would put a go to your custom budget and just max yourself out for that campaign that you're willing to do, and then do that higher than whatever they're offering. Whatever they're offering, everybody's doing that, which means you're bidding with a ton of crap, ton of people. So if you raise your custom at that point, like, you're bidding with way less people because you're bidding with people who are also custom. Most people are not going to go higher than the recommended that they put for $500 a week or something, or something like that. So that's one big one.
And they just charge you based on the lead that comes through, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you got to stay on top of that too. Because so, if the call comes in and say you don't mark it as this was a real lead, right? Or this was a bad lead, or this was a spam call. If you don't mark any of that, mark any of that stuff down, Google is not getting any data for their platform. And if Google is not getting any data out of you for their platform, you're not going to get more results. We are every single day marking our calls, whether they were leads, they were not leads, whether they were good, they were bad. And then, yeah, I think that's helping big time.
We need to take this conversation offline because I have some dumb questions for you. But I don't want to waste time on this podcast. But
yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's a whole rabbit hole. We could go down for sure.
A lot of very dumb questions for you.
So
good answers to dumb questions.
Yeah. Yes.
But Google is a huge benefit in every way, shape, or form, as long as you, one, use it properly, and two, contribute to their data collection. Not that they don't have enough data as it is, because they probably know what you look like in your underwear as a baby.
Yeah.
But as you contribute to their data collection with the platforms you pay them to use, they will help you. Yeah. That's one thing about Google.
And also, you know, the Google gods love reviews, right? So, you know, to me, it's all right. What's your system for getting reviews on a consistent basis from the people that you did a fantastic job for?
Yeah. Right. And you want like 7 touch points just for Google reviews.
Yeah.
Every service.
Yeah.
So like if you ask.
What do you mean by 7 touch points?
Like, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I gotcha.
My first thing that I'm thinking when I'm walking through the door, like, hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you today. This is a great house. I just want to let you know, first and foremost, like my goal is to give you a 5-star service. Like, I don't know what any other plumbers are doing. And honestly, I don't care. I just want to let you know if I'm not performing a 5-star service for you, please stop me and just tell me, because my best interest is your best interest. That's like the first touch point when you walk in the door.
Positioning. You're positioning that review. It's the same thing with referrals too.
Yeah.
Positioning, like, hey, I like to build my business on referrals. You let them know that right off the bat. The same thing with reviews, right?
Yep. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I like to build my business by meeting great people. The best way for me to do that is by personal introductions, especially if it is a referral. Should be a slant. Every referral should be giving you referrals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they went through the same process. Yeah. So there's actual cognitive dissonance. And I think that that's what positioning does, right? When you've told somebody enough times that this is what you're going to do, and then you actually do it at the end, whether it's review, whether it's referral, then they're like, yeah, well, you already, like, how can I say no?
Yeah.
I already signed up for this. You already told me you were going to do this.
Right. And then, yeah. So end of the sale, hey, you know, would you mind? Here's the thing. You don't have to do it right now. You could do that, this or that. Or you can be like, yeah, do it right now. Scan this thing right here, right now. Like, please, like, that would help me big time. You could send thank you cards, which you should. Very cheap, easy way to get a referral, but two, a review. And then newsletters that also ask for reviews every single month. And then follow-up text messages. And then follow-up phone calls after, like, one, after you're there. Two, after the service is done, of course. So just multiple points of, you know, cause then if you shot at something one time, you know, you have a 50-50 chance. But if you shot at something 10 times, you know, you got what? 10%,
right.
Higher likelihood, right? I don't know. Maybe that's not the probability.
I mean, I'm sure that is not apples to apples, but
no,
the analogy, we understand the analogy.
Yes.
Yeah. 10 times the chance. Exactly. Depends on how good a shot you were to start with.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
So. Yes. 10x.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, that's big. And then now actually another last little Google tidbit, Google Local Service Ads is now going to be controlled by your Google My Business page. So they're going to be one entity in Google rather than two separate places, which means your Google reviews are going to get linked to your Google Local Service Ad like thing, like your Google Guarantee thing, which is going to, if you have fake reviews, it will get rid of them because Maps will know exactly whether you've been there or not. And then it's going to have like a weird link. So the area is going to make a huge difference where your reviews are based on where your ads say that you serve.
I feel like I saw an email about that today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
That's big.
Yeah. Because ultimately, if somebody looks up solar people in my area, and then, you know, I won't say any of your competitors' names, but, you know, they've got 300-400 reviews and you've got 17.
Right.
Like, if I don't know you, I'm not calling you.
Right.
Right. That's just, but if you had 50, 60, 80, 100 of them and they had 200, then I might still call you.
Yeah.
Right.
Higher likelihood. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
5-star don't even matter. It's just the number of how many.
Yeah. How many people have actually done business with you?
And 3-star matters. No matter how many you got.
Yeah.
a 5-star and 4.9, 4.8,
yeah,
don't matter as long as you have a ton. Yeah, massive lead gen in Google. And a lot of that Google My Business thing is free, dude.
Yeah.
Free. Big ROI. Yeah, so I mean, so if lead gen's the next big move, I mean, I also would do 10 times the amount of mailers that you did. Big time. 5,000 a month for a year to find out, okay, this place is definitely not working.
Yeah.
100%. One mailer is going in the garbage immediately. 90% of the time. Probably 95% of the time. But 12 mailers, month after month after month after month, you're going to catch somebody at some point, sometime. They're going to have had a conversation, and you're going to be the mailer that showed up.
Yeah. And that's a campaign that's easy enough to build out because you just do it based on the weather and what their pain point is based on what time of year it is. Mm-hmm. Right. So you just hit them a pain point every single time of the year. Where it's like, oh, your AC has been crazy. It's been 100 degrees in Connecticut. I bet your electric bill is insane right now.
Yeah. And you want to know what else is insane? The savings from this freaking solar program, bro. Yeah. And you know what else is insane? Soul Choice customer service.
That's right. You got to get that tattooed on your bicep and have the picture, you know, have the picture on the mailer. Or yeah. Just airbrush it in.
Yeah.
On the,
yeah, right. Yeah.
You don't have to please, you probably don't want to get that tattoo. Yeah,
maybe.
Maybe you do. Hey. I mean, no judgments either way.
I don't have any yet. So, I mean, I'm not getting any younger, man.
Right. Well, you only have one choice then.
Yeah.
It's the sole choice.
Yeah, right.
Go after this podcast. We'll go.
Yeah, we'll get matching tattoos.
You going to get one too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, dude. Hey, couldn't hurt. I got some room.
Yeah, you've got the least amount of real estate left on you.
You guys want to partner up and then, you'll have a reason to get it on there.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
Or do the campaign, the like the guy that got paid 50 grand to get a tattoo on his forehead. I forget what company it was. Some company did that. The guy got paid 50 grand to tattoo their logo on his forehead.
Oh, wasn't it a radio station?
I think it was, yeah.
A radio station put the thing and it
50
was...
50 grand?
And yeah. It said underneath, like, this is a joke. Don't do it. And then they went to court because the dude did it and they didn't give him the money.
Yeah.
And then he won.
Yep.
All for 50 grand, huh?
Dude, if 50 grand is what's going to make you put, I'm an idiot on my forehead. That's
yeah. That's a low number.
That's tough. Yeah. But hey, dude, he won the money. So who's laughing?
Get it removed probably, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there goes 10 grand. So yeah. He actually netted 40. And then after taxes, actually wasn't that great of a deal.
Hey, hopefully. Yeah. Cause is that 1099 money? Probably.
Yeah. I'm sure that was taxed.
Not a gift. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Sure. That was taxed.
Oh man. All right. So then, yeah, dude, I mean, that's awesome. So it seems like basically, so it seems to me like if I had to summarize the whole thing, right. You're working on the best way to get lead gen. You build enough lead gen to where there's no possible way that you could even take it on, that you're also passing to the guys who you found that are correct. Hungry guys, real hungry yeah. guys, not guys that need the leads, but right. the fact that they're strong and hungry and you know they're good, you correct. Keep them by giving them some stuff. And then yeah.
and there's no
in turn, you build a team.
For sure. And there, like I said, there's no shortage of being able to recruit and find people to close deals. Like that's
a lot of people want to do that
so
when the money's there.
And and I think the biggest thing with marketing is always testing and measuring, right? So mm-hmm. making sure you're tracking where your leads are coming from, so understanding what were the hard costs and also what were the softer costs of your time, right? And giving yourself how much money do you want to make this year, divide that by the number of hours you want to work. That's your hourly rate. So that goes into the ROI for any marketing.
Mm.
Right.
It's how many hours did you invest in that? And I think people miss that a lot. They're like, well, it was free. It was just my time. It's like, your time's not free.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, no.
You don't get it back. It's not free.
And the other thing with the budget too that always drives me crazy is, you know, we all have a certain expectation how much we want to spend on marketing to get a certain back. And sometimes we don't because one, either the marketing's not efficient or two, we're just not correctly allocating money. But, like our measuring tape is all messed up. Everybody mm-hmm. wants to, yeah, I think, you know, I want to make 100 grand. I should spend 10 grand. I'm going to spend it like this. And you spread 10,000 in five campaigns. Like you have five campaigns that fail because everyone out here is marketing with those same things that you've heard of with millions of dollars. So it's like understanding that whatever it is you're thinking that you're going to do with one thing, hit that one thing so hard that it blows away your expectations. And whatever it is you want to try with, 10 times that much just to start, because I'm sure that whatever it is, it's not enough every single time. And then once you see results with that, because you'll most likely get more results when you, like you said, make more shots, that's when you know, like, okay, what is the real ROI going to be for this if I crank it up?
Yeah. And then you turn the volume up to 1,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Small efforts don't work. Not in marketing. Not anymore.
Yep.
33 touch points or something like that now.
Yeah. It's insane.
It's nuts. But, yeah, dude. Hey, dude, Jeff, I'm like super grateful you came out here, man.
Yeah. Likewise.
I'm grateful to be here. Always get great insights from you guys,
man.
And I'm like a little stubborn too, so
it's all right.
It's fine. Yeah. Just keep beating me over the head with ideas.
We intend to.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, I'm stubborn too.
Yeah.
Maybe you're on the D scale too.
Yeah.
Maybe. Probably.
Yeah. High
I
D.
Think so.
On the disc wheel.
The disc wheel. You know.
You know, I think I've got a little of everything, and they come out at different times. You know.
Mm.
It's like multiple personality disorder.
Which Jeff is here today.
Yeah.
Jeff loves this, but Jeff also hates this.
But Jeff is supportive of this. But Jeff doesn't
Jeff
care.
Jeff is very excited about this.
Be like Jeff.
All right. Well, yeah, last question. Where can your audience find you? How do people get in touch with you? How do they stay updated? You know, where give us a shameless plug of everywhere we can, the listeners can find you.
Yeah, they can find me at Soul Choice on Instagram.
Okay.
Jeff Amana, Facebook.
And that's SOL Choice.
Yes.
As in the sun. Yes.
And you have a website?
I do have a website.
What's your website?
Soulchoice.us.
Nice.
Beauty. Okay. Awesome, man. Well, yeah, appreciate having you, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing where this thing goes. And maybe if you were interested, you know, we're trying to get people back in like a year later, see where they're at, and then we'll see where you're at there. And maybe, man, you'll have so many freaking leads. You'll be hanging out.
I definitely have some takeaways to focus on coming from this conversation. So
yeah,
I appreciate it.
Beautiful. Love it, man.
We're going to 10X everything.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And so I appreciate you guys.
Not call centers, though.
Not call centers. The things that work. We're not really sure about mailers, but maybe we'll try it.
Oh, yeah, dude.
All right. Well, that concludes our show. I hope you all enjoyed this conversation as much as we did. And if you are struggling or even thriving as a business owner and you're interested in coming on the show, just leave a post in the comment section below with a way to get a hold of you, or send us an email at danielcallahan@actioncoach.com
or lauren@ppwct.com. And we can't wait to have you here. Thank you all for listening. Bye-bye.